Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Back, folks, beyond the official narrative here on Republic Broadcasting, and trying to find that missing frame, see how this does make sense with Michael Gaddy, Stephen Douglas Whitener, and Blackbird Nine. Mike, back to you, sir. So, I mean, do you see this sort of settling down at this point from what we're told, the official story, you know, with what's transpired between these nations? This is, in a large way, of course, between the support for Gaza and genocide from the U.S. and what this is showing as far as Israeli military strength. Far from it. You know, a lot of people are saying showing weakness shows Israel is weak and the U.S. is weak and you know, in very poor light. They think Biden won't get reelected because of the Gaza genocide, for that matter. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Mike? Is this really going to fizzle out at this point?
Well, no, Richard, it's not going to fizzle out because money and war are the two things that these international Jewish bankers have to have. And for you folks who would like to, if you haven't, please read Major General Smedley Darlington Butler's book, and it's on the internet. It's real. You can find it, no charge. It's called War is a Racket, or you can buy it if you would like to have it. The other thing that I would like to suggest for people to read is go to an article that was begun by a gentleman by the name of Randolph Bourne after World War One. And he started that article. He passed away before he finished the complete work. But it's the title of it is War is the Health of the State. Now, just to show the duplicity, I hope I don't jump too far away from your question here, Richard. But here's a question for the entire panel. Who funded the Islamic Brotherhood in 1978?
Stephen? Stephen going
okay,
once?
Sorry, mute. Okay, wasn't that, I want to say Trilateral Commission, but I'm not sure that's right. But you said 1978, right? That tell us. It's just a guess.
Well, I need to question Blackbird on this as well. Blackbird, do you know?
I thought it was CIA, but I don't have that in front of me.
Well, Blackbird, you don't need it in front of you. Because here is something that most people don't know, that under the Jimmy Carter administration, who was his foreign policy advisor? Uh-oh, here comes the break.
Cliffhanger. All right, stick around, folks, if you want the conclusion. Here with Blackbird 9, Stephen Douglas Whitener, and Michael Gaddy, the one and only. We'll be right back for hour two.
12th Simple with Kalrata Shilaji, fact bit number 3. Shilaji is the supreme yoga vaha. Within Ayurveda, Shilaji is the singular substance that towers above all other herbs, herbal minerals, and earth-made adaptogens. Yoga vaha refers to substances that have the ability to synergistically make better and carry other substances to its prescribed destination. In the case of Shilaji, most any herb, food, or mineral is amplified with ionic potential, superimposing superior efficacy with increased cellular energy and absorption rates. One of the best applications for Shilaji is to add a drop or two into your favorite herbal tincture and foodstuff. Simply put, Shilaji makes other substances more effective.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Good evening and Welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. Hour two of the broadcast here on this Friday, the 19th of April, 2024. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative, here with Michael Gaddy, Stephen Douglas Whitener, and Blackbird Nine. And, well, discussing the machinations of the perpetual war machine, as it is the Zio military industrial complex. And, well, Mike, please, if you could reiterate what you were postulating after you asked at the end of the first hour. Stephen suggested the Trilateral Commission, Blackbird suggested the CIA, and I'm sorry, sir, what were you continuing with?
Yes, my question was, who was Jimmy Carter's foreign policy advisor?
Well, that would be Mika Scarborough's dad, old Zabrinsky, who wrote the Grand Chessboard.
You mean Zbigniew?
Yeah, that's the guy. Well,
okay.
And
well,
his other son is an ambassador to Poland. And
yes.
His other son's a big military expert. Fun,
yes.
Interesting family, that. Born in Poland, no less.
Well, let me ask you another question. Who was the director of the CIA at that time, Blackbird?
Was that Colby?
No, it was a guy by the name of Robert Gates.
Yes, you're right. Okay.
Okay. So here is the thing that comes down. Now let's go back to a 1998 interview of Mr. Zbigniew Brzezinski. This is very telling, folks. Now here was the question, the first question. The former director of the CIA, Robert Gates, stated in his memoirs, From the Shadows was the title, that American intelligence services began to aid the Mujahideen in Afghanistan 6 months before the Soviet intervention. In this period, you were the national security advisor to President Carter. You therefore played a role in this affair. Is that correct? To which Mr. Brzezinski stated, yes, according to the official version of history. Listen to that, folks, the official version of history. CIA aid to the Mujahideen began during 1980. That is to say, after the Soviet Army invaded Afghanistan on 24 December 1979. But the reality, secretly guarded until now, is completely otherwise. Indeed, it was July the 3rd of 1979 that President Jimmy Carter signed the first directive for secret aid to the opponents of the pro-Soviet regime in Kabul. And that very day, I wrote a note to the president in which I explained to him that, in my opinion, this aid was going to induce a Soviet military intervention. Well, of course it did. That was exactly what the CIA had planned. But here's the second question. Despite this risk, you were an advocate of this covert action, but perhaps you yourself desired this Soviet entry into war, and you were looking to provoke it. But Brzezinski says it isn't quite that way. We didn't push the Russians to intervene, but we knowingly increased the probability that they would. Next question. When the Soviets justified their intervention by asserting that they intended to fight against a secret involvement of the United States in Afghanistan, people didn't believe them. However, there was a basis of truth. You don't regret anything today? Listen to this, folks. It's critical. Zbigniew Brzezinski says, regret what? That secret operation was an excellent idea. It had the effect of drawing the Russians into our Afghan trap. And you want me to regret it? The day that the Soviets officially crossed the border, I wrote to President Jimmy Carter saying, we now have the opportunity of giving to the USSR its own Vietnam War. Indeed, for almost 10 years, Moscow had to carry on a war unsupportable by their own government, a conflict that brought about the demoralization and finally the breakup of the Soviet Empire. Next question. And neither do you regret having supported the Islamic fundamentalism, having given arms and advice to future terrorists? Brzezinski, what is most important to the history of the world, the Taliban or the collapse of the Soviet Empire? Some stirred up Muslims or the liberation of Central Europe and the end of the Cold War? Question, some stirred up Muslims? But it has been said and repeated Islamic fundamentalism represents a world menace today. Brzezinski, nonsense. It is said that the West had a global policy in regard to Islam. That is stupid. There isn't a global Islam. Look at Islam in a rational manner and without demagoguery or emotion. It is the leading religion of the world with 1.5 billion followers. But what is there in common among Saudi Arabian fundamentalism, moderate Morocco, Pakistan militarism, Egyptian pro-Western or Central Asian secularism? Nothing more than what unites the Christian countries. Obviously, the initial funding of militant Islam by the CIA under the leadership of Robert Gates and the idiocy of the unprovoked invasion of Iraq have united these stirred-up Muslims into a force that Bush, Cheney, et al. Say requires a never-ending preemptive wars, as well as the removal of all of our liberties guaranteed in the Bill of Rights and our Constitution. Folks, I could go on. It's a long interview. But in essence, in 1979, the United States gave the Islamic Brotherhood $500 million U.S. taxpayer dollars to initiate a war. Now, what do you think today they wouldn't do to create another war, Frederick?
That's it. Yeah, that's their job, is to go out and create situations that hopefully their, you know, game theory models say we have the probability that we will get these results, you know. And if it blows up in their faces, then they, you know, cover it up. If they have success with it, it runs in the paper and everybody gets awards and medals and things like that. But, you know, yeah, Zabrinsky, you know, he's a piece of work in that whole thing of giving the Soviet Union their Vietnam. You know, that I remember that quote from that article you're reading, that, you know, that this was all about crippling the Soviet Union into an unpopular war that they could not win, and, you know, to basically, you know, accelerate the collapse of the Soviet Union. And again, it's fascinating to me that, you know, the United States was originally allies with Russia, Tsarist Russia, and then for over, what, 16 years after the Bolshevik Revolution, the United States refused to acknowledge the Soviet Union because they still recognized, you know, the old Imperial Rome, or Russia, excuse me. And then it was when FDR got elected, the first thing he did was recognize the Soviet Union, and, you know, Stalin became Uncle Joe, and suddenly we're the best pals ever up until after Stalin's death. And then when they had that huge purge of the NKVD of all the, you know, the hardcore Zionist Jews that came out of the Cheka and everything, when that purge happened, suddenly, you know, you had the Cold War. It's like, why is the Soviet Union suddenly our adversary, and why are all of these Jews in the American political system now trying their best to destroy the Soviet Union? And yeah, you finally see it with Afghanistan, and you know, then those people that the CIA backed under Carter and Zabrinsky and Robert Gates, you know, that became the base. You know, that was a database of mercenaries that were on the payroll that basically got reactivated, but now to play the enemy when the Americans invade for the heroin to finance all of their black ops to carry out the Odin-Yenin plan. You know, that ecstasy money coming out of the Israeli ecstasy couldn't pay for everything. You had to have that Afghanistan heroin to really pay for all those deep pocket black ops, right? So back to you.
Well, very quickly, pardon me, Richard, I just need to ask Blackbird one more question. When the wonderful Donald Rumsfeld, resigned his position as Secretary of Defense, who did George W. Bush put in his place?
I'd go ahead and tell me. I'll look it up. But
Robert Gates.
Robert Gates. Okay, there you go.
So, folks, people really believe that election makes a difference. You don't understand that all of the machinations that are going on in the background, presidents are puppets. And the crew just keeps being the same and they keep revolving. I mean, let's stop and think about it. I brought it up to my friend DW today, that wonderful fellow named Henry Kissinger, who was a foreign policy advisor for 11 consecutive presidents, both Republican and Democrat, made the statement back in 1968 that American military personnel are nothing but dumb, stupid animals fit only for foreign policy. Now, having said that, why would future presidents bring him in as a foreign policy advisor?
Right. Well, Mike, of these seven countries in 5 years, PNAC, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan. Those six before Iran. Would you say that the West feels they more or less achieved their objectives in those countries at this point? Like all of them?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Forgive my ignorance.
For sure. Okay. No. No. You, Richard, it's ignorance is not knowing. Stupidity is knowing and still not believing, and you're certainly not stupid.
Well, thank you, sir. So, I mean, at least for appearances, when you mention leaders are puppets, at least for appearances, then do you expect there'll be a much more dragged-out conflict ending in an Iranian regime change?
Oh, yes. There's no doubt about it. You know, the whole thing was planned ahead of time. And folks, when I mentioned before, I believe this whole thing was a psyop to make sure that Reagan was elected in 1980. Let's not forget right before the election or right after the election, were the hostages not released after Reagan won? I believe that's true.
Steven? As soon as he was sworn in, I remember that happening live. As soon as the inauguration took place, then they got on the plane and came home. It was coordinated. There's no doubt about that. You know, just right on the same time. I remember hearing about that live.
Well, big time. And you know, guys, I still believe I'm trying to find it. Richard, go ahead and let Blackbird and Stephen help us out here for a minute. I'm looking up something on that PNAC thing. I know I got it somewhere.
Okay. No. Well, yeah. Why don't I postulate to you, Blackbird? You would concur? You could see an Iranian regime change planned for the near future, in the next few years, perhaps even, or something?
Well, my question is, let's say Iran takes the bait and they're able to push through, you know, the U.S. going to war yet again for their greatest ally, Israel, after the sincere lobbying efforts of people like Reverend John Hagee, right, who is, you know, bringing 240 delegates to D.C. to meet with our Congress critters to tell them not to de-escalate this, but to escalate this because evil has to be destroyed, right? And, you know, you got Franklin Graham going to Auschwitz to see the shoes and then talking about we've got to support our greatest ally, Israel, and don't let, you know, Iran wipe them off the map. You know, so they're always pushing that big lie that, you know, the guy, you know, after 9/11 had said that, you know, Israel was going to be wiped off the map. And, you know, it was complete fabrication of the quote. He was talking about Zionism is going to be removed from the pages of history because it's a flawed system, basically. You know, and that, of course, got spun in the, you know, Mockingbird Jewish media as, you know, Iran wants to wipe Israel off the map. So Israel has the right to defend itself preemptively. So if anybody's going to be a threat to you, you have to rise and strike first. And well, this is the entire, you know, games theory behind Israeli strategy. It's always this, you know, we are a revenge culture, and if anybody looks like they might be a threat to us sometime in the future, we in our system are completely justified in taking them out ahead of time, even if they've not committed any crime against the Jews or the Israeli people to date, but they might in the future. And this is the mindset of these people that, you know, you just got to strike first. You know, somebody that might be an enemy, you got to take them out, you know. And so this thing of, you know, Iran is an existential threat to the Israeli project, you know, that's completely bogus, but that's what they're running with. And so my question is, what happens if, you know, the U.S. gets involved with Israel against Iran? What is Russia going to do, and what is China going to do, and what is the rest of the Muslim community going to do?
Yes. I was going to ask that to you and Stephen next. I mean, because these other six of the seven countries in 5 years didn't have this strong alliance with BRICS and with this Russia, and then by default China. Some claim there are direct ties with China and Iran with manufacturing and what have you, more than we realize as well. Would they leave them in the dust and allow a regime change and then just allow the new regime, Iran, to do everything with BRICS in the future? It would just be easier for everyone that way, right? As far as the elites, whom China and Russia, to some extent, you would think, have to please every now and again as well. I don't know. Blackbird?
Right. And, you know, the BRICS component, you know, that is huge because, you know, Putin is trying to set up a parallel system to the Rothschild New World Order of they control the monopoly on currency. And you, so with the BRICS system and with the alternatives to the SWIFT system, that threatens Jewish hegemony in money creation and banking. And we see what happens to countries that do that. You know, one of, you know, Hitler's big crimes, of course, was arresting the Rothschild agent there and closing down the Rothschild bank and printing their own currency. You know,
well, that is,
the American colonies, they, you know, our big crime was the, you know, colonial scrip. You know, that had to be wiped out. So back to you.
Yeah, no, that is an excellent point. I mean, any regime change in Iran would be pro-Western Jewish power, financial elite, we have to assume, would be hostile to BRICS, to Russia and China, right?
Richard. You,
oh, yes.
Oh, pardon me, Blackbird. Pardon me, Blackbird, but you just made something pop into my head there. I know that Blackbird 9 and probably Stephen remember this too. You guys familiar with Operation Ajax?
Yes, I guess Mossadegh in the 50s, right?
1953, the United States and Britain overthrew the duly elected government in Iran so that the British and the Americans could take over the petroleum industry in Iran. Do you think they have forgotten that, their ancestors? Do you think they've given it up?
So Iran would not go quietly into that, good night? Is that what, that's what you're suggesting?
Well, I can't see it actually happening, to be honest with you guys. I mean, you know, America looks upon war crimes as being heroic if the Americans are involved in them. And that is an emotional thing that is going to destroy this country. We have to look at things rationally.
We're spreading democracy. We're spreading democracy.
Yeah, we're spreading it, all right. And and the whole thing is, you know, I did a study. I'm going to do a Substack on this coming up. But I went back to the creation of the CIA, and I've done a research on every war that America has been involved in since the creation of the CIA, and you will find that they are all Jewish banker wars, every darn one of them.
Stephen?
Even Grenada.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, and they a lot of other ones they've tried to ramp up that did not set off, light off, thankfully, like the Liberty, and it's tried to start World War III by sinking it. That always comes to mind, that if that had happened, we'd be in a completely different world. And then this whole thing about hit them fighting the Soviet Union, they were also funding the Soviet Union. I mean, Armin Hammer and this committee, the elites, quote-unquote, so-called elite in this country, the bankers here, are funding that. We're getting the best enemies money can buy always. Like you said, they're all manufactured wars. And even the Soviet Union itself, you pointed out how we didn't, for a while, we didn't recognize them. But then they practically ran the Roosevelt White House. So,
well, they did.
That's what they set, and that set up the World War II, which set up to create the State of Israel, which set up this situation we're in now. And it's almost like it's a culmination of all of that coming to a head right now. Sometimes it does seem awfully apocalyptic these days, you know. Quite interesting times to be alive, I have to say.
Just, absolutely. Well, yeah. Stalin had over 235 agents in the FDR administration. And so do you think, and then with, gosh, guys, help me with, I'm trying to think of the operation. We were actually sending war supplies throughout that period of time. We were sending war supplies to Russia. There were times we even pulled supplies from our American forces. There's one I can document where we pulled supplies from MacArthur in the Pacific and sent them to Russia. And then, of course, Stalin takes all of these military supplies, and then we hold back our forces so Stalin can take Eastern Europe. Now, folks, you can't make this up. And Patton was getting ready to blow the whistle on the whole thing. He said, we fought the wrong enemy, and guess what happens to General Patton?
Yeah, it becomes obvious once you've seen it. It's frustrating that so many people don't know this, you know, still. We're told that World War II started in 1939 in September, but that's not really true. To me, it seems like it started in 1932. As said, the New York front page of the New York Times said Judea declares war on Germany, and they got their unconditional surrender in 45. That, when you look at it from that perspective, and the fact that there's been more and more power by the money changers since then, and orchestrated blood and death around the world, it seems to make a lot more sense to me when I look at the history from that perspective now.
Okay.
But I am, Richard, a thought criminal, so go ahead.
Oh yeah, that's true. Richard, may I indulge on your program here to just read a paragraph from a book in 1966?
Please do, Mr. Gadd.
All right, quote, the argument that the two political parties should represent opposed ideals and policies, one perhaps of the right and the other of the left, is a foolish idea, acceptable only to doctrinaire and academic thinkers. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical, so that the American people can throw the rascals out at any election without leading to any profound or extensive shifts in policy. Either party in office becomes in time corrupt, tired, unenterprising, and vigorless. Then it should be possible to replace it every 4 years, if necessary, by the other party, which will be none of these things, but will still pursue with new vigor approximately the same policies. Carol Quigley, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time.
I hate, come on, man. Infrastructure bill, Bidenomics, this stuff works. Blackbird, over to you.
Great comment, Richard. I needed a laugh.
Amazing what you can accomplish with the five B's of the Meany method: bully, bribe, blackmail, banish, and bury. You start to realize the nature of the adversary as this intransigent beast. That, yeah, this is the mob. No is not an answer. We're moving in. We're taking over. And if you're a good guy, we'll take care of you as long as we need you. But if you stand against us, we're going to destroy you. You're going to destroy your family, and this is how they operate. And this just that. And you, as you look through history and you start putting in all those hate facts that all of those Robert Maxwell textbooks, scholastic textbooks, leave out. You start to see this pattern that, I always go back to, they crucified Jesus in 30 A.D. and in 70 A.D. the temple was destroyed. That war never ended. That's what you got to get your head around, that whether you like it or not, you are at war, but it's a different kind of war. But make no mistake, it is war nonetheless. This is an existential war. These people want people like us gone so that they can rule the planet in their way. And this is what their entire belief system is about. And they're very, very serious about this. And, we have seen after 9/11, all of these little cells, werewolf cells, going into everything from large towns to small towns and just taking them over. This is why I always call them slime mold, because they come in and they present themselves as Holocaust survivors that are all about civil rights and progressive values and Tikkun Olam, fixing the world, and it all sounds good, and they've got philanthropy money. They just start spreading the money around everywhere for, all this good stuff. But there's always the string attached that, we'll give you this money for the university, but you've got to put in a Hillel chapter on the campus, and you've got to do this, and we've got to have a Holocaust center, and we'll take control of the stage at your university now, and we'll handle what acts deserve to come in and which ones should be shunned from our stages. We'll decide which speakers can come in and speak to the students and which they can't. And it's all about the power of the purse.
We'll be right back, folks. Stick around to the bottom of the hour.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less value its currency, the dollar, is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold, a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis, historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers and Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in five easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
We are back, folks, beyond the official narrative here at Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey here with Blackbird 9, Michael Gaddy, and Stephen Douglas Whitener. Blackbird, over to you, sir.
I'm just going to the game theory of, okay, what is their end game? And always in the distant mist, I see the Great Reset of 2030 and the Klaus Schwabs and the, you know, Noah Hararis are saying, you know, we're going to reset everything and everyone will have their social credit score and, you know, you'll be able to live in these little 15-minute cities and you will eat the bugs, et cetera. And we're going to try to figure out what to do with all the useless eaters that we don't need anymore. And so, yeah, this is, you know, when you extrapolate it on out, it's like, okay, well, where are they going with this? And it is their new world order, and it's basically they have to destroy all of Western civilization, you know, all of the Muslim world, to basically bring in this new world order. And this is their chutzpah, that we're going to destroy everything that exists and bring in a new system, and everyone will just forget about the past. And that's part of the thing, is, you know, to get people to, you know, just not even remember who their people are, where they came from, but just, you know, going to work, 1984, getting paid, going home to your little Skinner box, and, you know, getting entertained in whatever your little forte happens to be. And this is, you know, where we are with so many people that just, you know, you leave your somewhat safe home in hostile territory to get to your job. And then you do your job, then you come back to your little Skinner box safe home, and you know, you're watching the television or playing the games or watching porn or whatever. And yeah, this is what they want for us. And yeah, this is, you know, completely against anything to do with progressing civilization. And that's why, yeah, there's their counterculture thing is all about destroying civilization, destroying beauty, destroying intellect, reducing the humans down to a dull, manageable slave. Low IQ, you know, slaves are what they want from us, and they're going to be the royalty of the planet. And as I always say, you know, I'm against it. So back to you.
Makes me think of, Stephen, what you were sharing with, I think, William and I recently. It was like included a meme, but it was these Jews talking about how basically like radical Islam could be utilized to take down the West, right? Which would be what? Amalek of what they call Amalek of Europe and the U.S. I'm sure Blackbird would concur. Stephen, do you want to share more from that detail?
I've heard that said by a couple of different Israelis that Islam is the broom of the Jews in Europe, that they're sweeping the Christians away with all of this weaponized migration, I guess we'll call it. The same thing is being done here now that was done to Europe over like 2014 to 2017. That period, that's when they had those waves coming in from the, you know, the Syrian refugees, the last secular Arab country that they were destroying at the time. They claimed they were all from there, but all these refugees were from wherever, you know. Some of them were even from sub-Saharan Africa. It's one famous video comes to my mind of this guy coming up to the camera screaming, more money, and they just, you know, they just were inundated with that, and you can see the result of that now in Europe, what's happening with all of the rapes and the crime, and then the people being balkanized and feeling powerless, even though I will point out that at this point that there's a political response in Germany where the right wing is actually getting some people behind them, and if there was an honest election, they probably would prevail, you know, would win now. But it's, you know, at what cost? No matter what, they've been completely destroyed, basically, as to what civilization was there. And the same thing, that's ironic, that the same thing was happened to Syria, that and then that happened to Europe, and now they're bringing this stuff here, too. They're bringing people in by hordes, you know, not only across the southern border, but this enemy government that we have occupying D.C. is flying them in. Your Department of Homeland Security, so to speak, coordinating with Mexican authorities. There's WhatsApp channels that they conspired on to stage invaders that they had lined up in groups of like 1,000, as much as they could process at once. You know, line them up, set them down. I mean, there's video of this happening, y'all. That's what stage we're in here, okay? And this war is being waged against, like you said, against him, but whatever, it's against white men, it's against the Western civilization, it's against people gathering together, like as Blackbird was saying, people are, they want us to go home and sit in our little boxes and consume and be entertained and then go do our useless job until the AI takes it over and die as quickly as possible. That's what our medical system, to me, has been completely turned into, that instead of it taking care of you and making you live a healthier life, it's exploiting whatever sickness and illness you have up to the point where you are no longer, you know, a moneymaker for them. They want you to die as quickly as possible. I've seen doctors come on that would on TikTok and describe that. That's what the medical industrial complex has turned into. And, you know, just the same way COVID PSYOP put that out stark in front of us. I've known, you know, that vaccination is not possible with intramuscular transfection for a long time, but I, back in the 10, 12, however, whenever the H1N1 was, the PSYOP fooled me. So I was better prepared this time. A lot of people weren't so lucky. They took those death jabs, and now they regret it. And they are starting to come around. I don't see that they're going to be able to get people to fall for that again. If people do, you know, that's that they're just way gone and programmed. But a lot of people that I have met over the past 3-4 years, they don't buy that stuff anymore. And I see here a lot of people speaking out too. People have kind of, I suppose, if they survived getting that shot, at this point they realize, oh man, I'm been damaged by this, and now they want to do what they can. And a lot more of those people that are really mad about it. So I don't think that'll happen again. And in the same way, I hope that this blatant, horrific, bloody genocide that they're committing in Gaza will backfire on them, and enough people will see that no, that is wrong. We can't be sending our money to these masters of war. And then, wait a minute, by the way, where's this money come from too? Maybe let's ask that question as the debt bubble keeps pumping up until it's about to burst, no matter what we do. That's kind of where I see things are right now, you know. And yeah, that's Friday evening, you know, 2024. I'm just glad to be here for one more. You know, these people hadn't won yet. It's like Blackbird said, it's an existential war. As long as we are still here and talking to each other and trying to gather together, too. I'm going to be at the Dixie Republic tomorrow evening. There's going to be a strong arm contest, and their people are going to get together in real life and talk to each other and compare notes, so to speak. And that happens more and more often in places like that. That's why they tried to shut the churches down, too, even though they were controlled 501c3 little fed monitored you know, social engineering things. They were still a place where the same people met often and could compare notes. And if we do that often enough, you know, and are not as entertained by, you know, whatever is on the box at home, then these people are toast. That they've been ripping, you know, there's no reason for us to continue down the same path. Is what, you know, all of us that see it can say, look, there's a train coming, let's get off the track. I think that they're doing everything they can to prevent us doing that and telling enough people to get off the track, because they'll go off of it by themselves. How about that? I'll toss it back to you with that one.
Well, no, thank you, Stephen. Let me toss it over to Mr. Gaddy.
Well, guys, you know, I think there are many of us who have been trying to warn people for decades now, and yet even when you can show them just a myriad of evidence, factual documented evidence, they choose not to believe it, because if they had to believe it, it would require they do something besides vote. And as long as you keep that voting out there, and I said on my program on Tuesday night, I said, voting is the pacifier they let us suck on while they rape us. And it makes everyone think, oh, I've got a say-so in government. People, you have no say-so in government. You know, elections are fraudulent. I've been going back looking, just trying to make a list of the fraudulent elections. And so far, I'm up to 1868 when Grant won the election, and it was as fraudulent as any we've ever had. And there is just one fraudulent election after another. And the old point of it is who gets to count the votes? American people are lazy. They are intellectually lazy. They're physically lazy. They don't want to be bothered with anything except what entertains them. Now, there's a group out there. There's quite a few people who are going, no, I won't put up with this, you know. And so my question is always, when I talk with these people, where is that line you will not cross? If you don't have a line in your mind, something that you will not do, because they're coming for the guns. We're seeing that in so many states, and even at the federal level now, there's going to be a huge red flag event that's going to come up. And all of the American people who are addicted to emotionalism, and they're going to have this tragic event somewhere where a bunch of children get killed, all this other stuff shot. You know, the schools, they've been working on the school, and they may do it again, or they may do it someplace else. But I'm thinking that if I was planning a PSYOP myself, I would make sure that this next red flag event occurs at a political rally. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, yeah, no, you're thinking about on the right track. I mean, we should be less worried about these geopolitical events and more worried about the psyops, which are going to happen on domestic soil here for them to further their control over us. Blackbird?
Oh, definitely. And the idea of electing somebody that's going to have the political will to represent the people, yeah, that's not going to happen. Basically, you've got this cabal that has all the seats of power locked down, and you get elected into that seat, and you can either become a middle manager, you know, okay, you are now going to sell this communitarian agenda to your precinct, your county, your state, whatever, but, you know, you will give ear service to your constituents, but you really don't have any power to go against what we're doing. You're just here to roll it out as a middle manager to your areas. In return, you will get this much funding for various good projects, etc., and we'll help you get reelected. If you try to go against us, we will make sure that you never, ever, ever get elected again. And this is, you know, the whole I call it IPAC instead of APAC because there's nothing about America in it. But the American-Israeli, you know, PAC, you know, that is all about rigging the election. Then you got, you know, ADL out there, and you got the SPLC and the NAACP. And these are all terrorist groups that are sitting there carrying out counterintelligence operations on U.S. soil to manipulate elections and, you know, the way things are. And everybody seems to be fine with that because they're a good doer NGO groups, right? So we're just being controlled by this fifth generation, fourth generation slime mold infestation of our government. Yeah, you had a system that, you know, was well designed of checks and balances, but when it gets invaded by occult forces, when people can no longer make their own decisions because they're having to stay alive by agreeing with the powers that be, the system gets skewed. And yet, one of the things that these chicken swingers are always kvetching about is the Spanish Inquisition and the Gestapo. You know what the Spanish Inquisition and the Gestapo did that they hate it so much? They exposed all the secret organizations, and they were tracking them down, all these Illuminati-type groups, etc., that are playing the werewolf game on the population. They were proactively hunting them down like Van Helsing in the, you know, Dracula story. You know, that you, it's like, we know you're there, and we're going to root you out. Andrew Jackson, you know, you're a nest of vipers. I will root you out. That's what they fear, is being exposed to the light of day. But as long as people are just doing this, you know, voting for the lesser of two evils in this uniparty system, you know, it's not going to change things because the systems have been infiltrated by this slime mold that has control of the money supply. Until that is broken, you know, you're not going to affect real change. So back to you.
Stephen?
Yeah, the people that were called out, you said exposed of what they were doing, the, on a local level, kind of thing that's happening up in northern Idaho, where they're up there trying to manufacture all of this racism and stuff. You mentioned the SPLCIA, and one of James O'Keefe's groups that had infiltrated that. These NGOs were basically out fundraising. They were trying to instigate racial incidents of some kind because they needed to justify their existence. You know, they were out there raising money off of this outrage that they're creating, this "let's you and him fight." That goes all the way back to Potok and D's creating the thing in the first place, you know, and the mail-in and all that. It all, once you go back to that seed, you can see how this fifth generation warfare kind of came together over time. It just, I mean, you're making me think a lot, you know, talking about these things and putting things in perspective that are happening now. And the people that are doing that, it's like, do they not realize that we can see them, as Dave Chappelle would say? Don't you know I can see you? And I could call your name of what you're lying and doing?
Well, I guess it's a number. It's a numbers game. They figure there are too few of us who can see them and are keeping up with all this. Isn't that right, Mr. Gaddy?
Oh, absolutely, Richard. They look at us, you know, and we will know when they start coming after us, we will know that as a group of people who actually see and understand this thing, when they decide to come after us, we'll know that we're having too much influence. And they won't put up with that. But they're going to allow, they have to allow some.